So let me start by welcoming everybody and a special word of thanks for participants joining us on the webcast as well. It really is nice to have all of you here. You would have seen that our results were released early this morning on Sense. I know in these difficult times, we're always confronted with people asking us a little bit more and a little deeper disclosure. So we certainly try to live up to that challenge this year. So thank you for joining us. The format that we'll take today is there will be a short presentation or just a very short brief overview by some of the executives in each one of the areas, after which I'll take some questions from the room here, and then we can also revert to the conference call for some calls there. So just before we start, if I can just please draw your attention to our normal forward-looking statement. These question and answer sessions tend to be quite robust, so please take note of our forward-looking statements and everything that might be said here today. To start with, I'm going to ask Harold to just give us a brief overview of the operational aspects of the result, after which Brenda will just reflect on the finances, and then I'll ask Nico to actually conclude, and then we can lead straight into the Q&A. So let's start. Harold, maybe I can just hand.
Thank you, everyone. I assume by now you have all seen the numbers as they came out this morning, so I'm not going to belabor them. However, I would like to just summarize them and the slight way forward for each of the operations. As you've seen, the group has done 1.53 million ounces of platinum in the year last year, and it's broken down below there on the slide. Rimplat, stellar performance as usual. Impala has improved year on year, but that number of 655 for Impala must be seen against the two big disruptive events that we've had in the prior year, leading into that year, and that is the number 14 shaft fire, where we've actually lost the capacity to produce from the 14 shaft decline, which has obviously dropped the year's number, and the number one shaft incident where the UG2 designed for facing had to be reinstated to number one shaft, which interrupted it quite the prior year and some of the others. But that also obviously contributed to the unhappiness that we still have with the lease. It's not firing on all cylinders, and I'm going to talk to you about how we are busy improving that. Mimosa, steady as she goes, there's no problem there, doing very well. Two Rivers, that's more or less the numbers we expect from the Two Rivers. They have quite great fluctuations due to the streets, and that number is not unusual, and it will probably sustain at that number. Marula is the other big disappointment. Two big contributing factors to Marula is the one is the community unhappiness with the chrome operation, that every time the community has a problem with the chrome from which they get a dividend, then they stop access to the trucks to the mine as well, because as you would know, the chrome recovery plant is situated on the mine. And that is really disruptive of quite a lot. So much so that we stopped the chrome operations with the vetting of the DMR, actually instruction from the DMR in February to stop it because of the consequences until the distribution of the dividends amongst the communities is sorted out. Since then, we've had no stoppages at Marula from there, but the year was severely impacted by that. The second big one was that we've gone into a restructuring process for Marula in the second half of the year to make it more robust on these sort of events. We've stopped two unprofitable parts of the mine and reduced the mine labor count. And I must say that since we've done that, Marula is performing quite well past year end, and we're holding some, so I'll talk a little bit about it forward looking as well. The third party production was quite a bit higher for this year. Specific once-off treatments that happened in this past year probably ran over into 2018 as well. And then the group unit cost up by 4.4%. The capital expenditure there, as you've got it, I need to maybe just make some comments on interpretation of some of the material that we've put out in Sense, and that is the 700 million rand shortfall that people interpret from the reviews we've done on 16 and 20 shops. During the year, we've done a production-ready review on our big projects, which I think is an appropriate thing to do. As you've seen, it's like 2 to 3 years until they hit the shaft, and we wanted to make sure whether they're actually capable of doing so. At 16 shafts, it became evident that mining the UG2 and the Marine Sea at the same time from a single level makes it quite stressful in terms of logistics, to get materials in, get people in, and to get rock out. So we've added a design that was never in there, which is extra loops around the stations and an extra ore pass system, which will hopefully make sure that we don't have any bottlenecks there. And we also added capacity for people in terms of surface change houses and so forth, material handling. And in that review, we've now got enough time to put those things in place until when they need it. For 20 shafts, the review found that the logistics is fine, because 20 shafts are only going to mine the grain field. That's not going to mine simultaneously. But we've had some repairs to be made to some of the ore passes. As you know, the incline-decline system, it means the incline-decline system below the Marine Sea is very close to the UG2, and therefore you go through some weak ground to get through the Marine Sea and those main ore passes. And there's some equipping delays that we had to budget for. The sum total of that is that the 3.9 billion rand that we equity raised 2 years ago for those two projects increases by 700 million. So the equity raise amount will fall short by 700 million over the next 5 years. It doesn't mean we don't have capital to spend it there. It's just the earmarked number will increase by 700 million in our forecast, and this forecast is now until 2022, so it's not immediate either. I just wanted to clear that out so that people understand. If there are more questions, I'll talk to that. On the right-hand side of the slide, I would like to do a bit of a forward look at what now. Now that we've got a new CEO, he's giving us a tough time saying, what are you guys going to do? We have applied our minds to the Impala operations and realize that we need more granularity when we look at individual shafts at Impala. They're all at a different life stage. I think you would have seen the slide that's on the web. We classify them as old shafts, mature shafts, and ramp-up shafts. The old shafts mostly left with a bit of UG2 to mine. Some of them already closed. Some of them are going to be closed in the next 2 years. And the strategy for them surely must be different than what we have for our ramp-up shafts. And we're giving specific attention to those. It's almost a harvest strategy for those. And if they can't make money in the short term, we shouldn't continue with them, because there's no need to hang on to those. But we can also be more aggressive in the way in which we may try and make money out of the last piece of the old shaft. So the strategy there is quite different. The mature shafts are the ones that have to compete with the rest of the industry. If they don't make money now, they are obviously not competitive. So therefore, the angle that we have on the mature shafts is to improve efficiencies, is to make sure they run at that capacity, and a lot of that has to do with the amount of people that we employ there and the amount of output we get from those shafts. There used to be models in the industry of how to mine efficiently, and we've got programs to go back to that. The ramp-up shaft, for this year at least, we've also added 14 shafts to 20 and 16 shafts because of the fact that 14 shafts is now coming back into production with that decline that burn. So together they form the backbone of the future production in Rustenburg. We have to set them up and we have to run them as such. So the approach there again is quite differently. Some of the techniques that we're looking at, some of the modernization stuff would be doing. That was really the stuff that will fail a little bit later. But I think the immediate target for us is to be cash positive going 2019. Doesn't matter what the metal price is. So we give ourselves a year, and we're doing a review. We've also said on the web that there's no holy cows, and if we cannot make money on any of the shops, there's no reason why they should be operating at this point in time. So it is quite a rigorous review that we are busy with, and it will, no doubt, have an impact on our labor complement. releasing the biggest portion of our variable cost is our labor complement. And it's almost impossible to get those shops into a cash positive position without redressing the labor complement across the lease. It's maybe not a one-off event. It's maybe something that can have serious phases, but we are going through it with our eyes wide open, making sure that we set the lease up to what we expect from it. There's no doubt that we need to spend the capital at 60 and 20, and I've already spoken about it. We have got the capital, don't worry. We will spend it wisely, and we'll bring those shops on. There were some slides that, for the first time, I think we're really positioning those two shops in terms of where they are in their ramp up. 16 shops, so from 40% towards its full production, 20 shops about 50%, and you can see the angle with which they ramp up. It is tough to grow shops so quickly, but they all have been designed to do that, and we are staffing them accordingly, and we'll make sure that we get value for our capital there. 16 shops, as you've seen, is definitely still on care and maintenance. There's no way that we're going to commit additional capital in these times of low metal prices, and we will revisit 17 shops as and when appropriate. Marula, I've spoken about the community issues, but it's not only the community issues. We cannot carry Marula, which I believe has got a very good ore body. We cannot continue to lose money on a good ore body, extract it year on year, and not bring money back to the shareholders. So it's on a very close watch. Everybody knows it is. Management know that. The communities know that. Our employees know that. Should Marula not be cash positive on a group level, we'll rather park it until one day that it can be, than to continue to not make money at Marula. We have engaged everybody in that regard. It's early days. We've only run for a few months without disruptions, but I'm very pleasantly surprised with what I've seen at Marula recently. I think we get the support from the community at this point in time, get the support from our employees, and they're really coming to the levels that we expect Marula to operate at. The other four operations I don't really want to say much about. Two Rivers, very happy with the cash generative nature, dividend paying, good partnership we have between ourselves and ARM. It has got the potential mining into the adjacent ground now, so it's got a longer life. It's something which doesn't need a lot of capex. So in these times, we're quite happy to have Two Rivers in our portfolio. Zimplats, the big decision for Zimplats have been made. That was to start with Mupani. Mupani is the replacement portal for the two old portals that we used to know as portals 1 and 2 that will be mined out. There are no new mining-related capital commitments to be made for quite a few years, at least until 2026 on at Zimplats. And I think that's a very good position to be in. And therefore, the board of Zimplats has also agreed on a dividend policy. We would like to start seeing money coming out of our Zimplats operation. There's no use in being something we're proud of, which we can't show money for. I think it's going to go into that direction. Mimosa, I think, is stable in getting dividends out of Mimosa. Only one issue that I alluded to, and that is the beneficiation issue. And I must maybe just spend 1 minute on that. You have read in the press about the new process that government supplies to, which is beneficiation in Zimbabwe, new technology, and so forth. The technology proposes to replace smelting and refining in one step. It's not been tested anywhere. It's not on a pilot scale anywhere, whatever. But I'm not disputing that it might be possible one day. For Zimplats, it will make no sense because it's smelting already. So you don't want to replace the process you have with something that just adds a little bit more. But as far as the motor is concerned, the focus is on the motor because it hasn't got a smelter and it hasn't got a refinery, and therefore it's an early source of concentrate for such a process should it be built in Zimbabwe. We are supporting government as far as their drive and their desire is to beneficiate in the country, and therefore we've just completed the feasibility study on having a smelter because I believe you do it step by step, through the smelter and the refinery, and then do the thing at the same time. And unfortunately, in the current environment we find ourselves in, it makes no sense for us to build a smelter in Mimosa, especially because it's capital that's the place that we got smelter in South Africa for that. But let it be. Mimosa cannot afford to build a smelter at this point in time. The alternative to that is in the first of January 2018 is a levy, a 15% levy on the sale of platinum, should you not be beneficiating in the country. Therefore, it is something we have to talk to government to, and we are talking to government to. We cannot afford a 15% levy either. So it is crunch time. We are making it very clear that we cannot afford a smelter and we cannot afford a 15%. We would rather park that resource until we can afford it than to make losses just to afford it. And therefore, it is our very clear stance between ourselves and our daily partners, Sibanye, in that process. That is the only unusual thing looking into the year ahead. Otherwise, Mimosa, I don't expect to have any surprises from. I really, really benefit from the extra capacity that we have, and I think that capacity is in value for us. So when we talk about the year ahead, I would summarize by saying Impala and Marula is where management will spend time in turning them into a cash positive position. Two Rivers, Zimplats, and Mimosa and IRA really have the ability and should be paying dividends towards the center. That's my summary. Thanks. I'm going to hand over to
Brenda, please.
To Brenda,
just quickly on the finances, Brenda.
It will be quick. Just on behalf, good day, everyone. I really will be brief. Just a few highlights on the income statement and then some of the cash. So revenue increased by 2.5% or some 900 million rand. Marginally assisted by a better rand basket, but there was a negative volume variance of 629 million as all production was not sold at the year end. Cost of sales was contained to an increase of 4%, which combined with a lower revenue increase, gave a gross loss of 529 million rand. Importantly, the gross loss excludes the receipt of 657 million rand received for the 14 shaft fire, and that was business interruption insurance that is below the line. Just to pause on the tax line for a minute, because the change year on year is very material and accounts for about 120 cents of the 149 differential in headline earnings. And there are two items in particular that gave rise to that differential. One is the increase in additional profits tax to Zimplats. That was 358 million rand. And secondly, there was a non-recurring 500 million rand in 2016 as a tax credit for the write-off of a bad debt. So that's quite a material differential. Just pausing on the impairment line that has caused some consternation, just to explain very briefly, in 2007, we prepaid what was the contractual royalty due to Rob Atacane. That amount was calculated as being the best estimate at that stage of the royalties that would be payable over the life of mine. The Buffer King received the cash and immediately injected it back into the group for equity. As we said today, we clearly have quite a different view for 2007 as to metal price outlook and production forecasts. And we deemed it prudent to impair the full amount of 10.2 billion still sitting as a prepayment. Maybe one last word on that, just to understand. The 10 years that have gone past since 2007 and now would have accounted for the vast majority, or the bulk of the value, if you like, of the royalty that would have been paid. The early days royalties are worth much more. So that value has already been realized. The accounting treatment is amortize it evenly over the period based on units of production. So that is why the amount of 10.2 billion sits there. It appears to be a very large number relative to the original prepayment. That maybe clarifies it a bit. On the cash, someone. Thank you. Roddy. The group generated R1 billion in cash before capital, which was then R3.4 billion, which, as Howard mentioned, includes the spend for 16 and 20 shafts of 1.14. Then there was net proceeds of R2.4 billion after the new bond raise and the early settlement of the 2018 bonds. So in brief, we had 6.5, and we made an simultaneous offer to settle the 2018 bonds that mature in February. Very little of that remains on the balance sheet as at June, and will come due as on maturity in February. We received another R1 billion from dividends, interest, and a repayment from the Morokoso Trust, which was the ESOP established many years ago, and it sold the shares it held in Platts and repaid the loan that was outstanding. The cash therefore ended at R7.8 billion. Net debt of 3.32 and a gearing ratio of 0.6. Now, facilities of R4 billion are intact. They remain completely unutilized and they're available until 2021. And that's all I wanted to touch on. Thank you.
I'd like to let my team, out of respect for the audience, I'm going to stand up. And just before I start, I've been at Intact for roughly 5 months. And I've had a very constructive onboarding process, and I say with a lot of support from both the board as well as management. I was fortunate enough to engage with important shareholders in the company, and I had one-on-one interviews with most of the board members. I've engaged with management staff, with the operations employees, organized labor communities as well as regulatory authorities. I've also been able to visit both of our operations, and I actually have been left with a fairly positive impression and many pockets of excellence within the company, which I'm very happy about. There are, however, obvious weaknesses that we have to address, and in particular the operating performance of Marula and in Paul Rassenberg, but also in just the way in which we operate. But we are aligned, we've got a strong alignment between the board and the management team, and we are energized by the challenges that lie ahead. So if I can just, I mean, the outlook was detailed in the webcast that was published this morning, but I'll just touch on a few salient features. Production outlook for 2018 for the group is 1.57 to 1.61 million refined platinum ounces, and that is made up from 680,000 to 720,000 refined platinum ounces from Impala Rustenburg, 85,000 platinum ounces in concentrate. From Arula, 175,000 ounces in concentrate from Two Rivers, 260,000 platinum ounces in matte from Zimplats, and between 115,000 and 120,000 platinum ounces in concentrate from Mimosa, as well as between 250,000 and 260,000 ounces from contributions from third parties. The unit operating cost for the group will be contained below 23,100 rand per platinum ounce for 2018, and capital has been planned at around 4.7 billion. The most pressing issues of the company at the moment is the gross profit, which declined from 4 million rand positive in 2016 to a loss of 529 million in 2017. And this is directly as a consequence of a 2.9 billion rand gross loss at Impala Rustenburg and a 586 million rand loss at Marula. So We have, as a group, set shareholder returns as our number one priority. Our first strategic objective is to return the group to a profitable position, and our second priority is to improve our long-term competitive position by increasing strategic optionality and by rebalancing the portfolio towards more lower-cost, mechanizable assets. We will take decisive action to achieve these objectives, and we will not tolerate loss-making production. We have, as a team, identified six key focus areas for the next 2 years, which I'll address on the next slide. I'm not sure if you can read all the fine print, but I'm just going to touch on it in principle. The one we've spoken about, the very first priority is the urgent turnaround required at Empire Rustenburg. There was a Rustenburg optimization initiative launched in January 2017. It's also known as Pakamisa Rustenburg, and that's aimed at addressing a wide front of operational improvements. We have also taken very important steps to strengthen the leadership at Rustenburg, as well as realigning on key priorities and performance expectations. In addition to that, we will be conducting a strategic review of the Rustenburg operations and do not exclude potential restructuring. At Marilla, which Harold spoke about, got a great ore body. I think the mine has addressed most of its initial technical challenges, but in spite of that, the mine is consistently underdelivered. It has operated at a loss over the last number of years. As a company, we cannot and will not support continued loss-making. I think the first steps in the right direction was taken during 2017 with the labor reduction of 900 employees and the suspension of the unprofitable hybrid section at Platinum Shaft. We have put the mine on terms and we intend to follow through. As a group, we will apply a very strict capital allocation policy, and within the current economic climate, we will defer all non-essential capital expenditure. That will, however, not affect the development and completion of our 16 and 20 shaft projects in Rustenburg and the development of a new Mupani mine in Zimplats. As a management team, we believe there is significant room to improve or for improvement as far as our organizational efficiency is concerned, and to that extent, we will develop bench strength at leadership level, and we will pay significant attention to our organizational culture, and we plan to become far more decisive and bold in terms of our actions. I have already stated a long-term strategic objective is to rebalance the portfolio, and I think it is important that we become less reliant on deep, conventional, expensive assets such as we have in Rustenburg. Our strategic objectives are underpinned by a fundamental philosophy that sustainable success is only achievable if we operate in harmony and to the benefit of all of our key stakeholder groups. We will achieve that by ensuring safe and healthy working conditions for our employees, by social and economic upliftment of the host communities in which we operate, and by insisting on a responsible environmental stewardship. That concludes my part of the introduction, and I'm quite happy to open the floor to Q&A. Thanks, John.
Thanks, sir. All right, very happy to take questions from the floor. Let's start with Gerard in the front here. We need a couple of roving microphones, perhaps. Just speaking to the microphone, Gerard, so that the guys on the web can also hear clearly the question.
Gerard, no question, Corey. Let me go, if I look at the production guidance at the group over time, it's been downgraded and downgraded and downgraded, and if I'm not mistaken, you also downgraded kind of a longer-term target from 850,000 ounces lower. My first question is, when does this coincide with a significant fixed cost intervention? The ounces are coming down, but the cost structure doesn't seem to follow that lower. That's the first question. And then just secondly, 17 shaft in half year, you said we're kind of taking it back to the board and now it's back on care and maintenance. The question is, at what point do you have to start reinvesting at the lease area to not compromise the long-term sustainable production? Or are you going to come out at some point and say this is a 500 or a 400,000 ounce operation?
Thanks, Phil.
So, the answer to your first question is in 2018. I don't want to go into too much detail, but we will be restructuring some of the costs this year. I don't see it as a once-off process, though. I think that we are going to go through various changes over the next number of years, but as a first response, there will be an intervention starting very soon, in fact. But as part of this strategic review, there may be further restructuring. I see the first response as a general across-the-board response where we have reduced costs, and that obviously includes a reduction in the number of people. But again, then I think there are other serious questions that we have to ask in terms of individual shafts and their continuation. And again, there I think that to the extent that we are not confident about achieving profitability in the near future, there are important decisions that have to be made. As far as 17 shafts is concerned, my personal belief is that the current pricing environment does not incentivize new deep level shafts and will not afford a significant recovery. And to those things, I'm not sure that we can or the board can justify. Now, these things are all trained at high risk. They all take longer, and our current projects are testament to that. They go through various iterations, and they always end up taking much longer and requiring a lot of cost. So I think, personally, if there is further investment, it will be in different class of assets other than the conventional shafts.
Some more? Let's just start with you on here, and I'll come back to you at the back there.
Thanks, Sean. Hi, guys. To follow up on Gerard's question, one way of improving efficiency is to reduce, fixed costs, net counts. I think we all agree that's long overdue. And the second one is to get more out of your employees from, motivation levels, compensation structures, all these kind of things. Now, you mentioned that you've made some management changes at the lease. How do you ensure that from here forward you get it right? Because at this stage, in addition to being overstaffed, there might be questions that at certain sections of your mind, your people just simply are not performing as well as they should, and whether that's an HR or operational management issue. How do you address that?
For the team to contribute as well, but my personal departure point is the leadership issue doesn't actually start in Rustenburg, it starts with us. So I think that we've had to rethink our personal accountability and relationship with Rustenburg leadership and the direction that we put forth for those people. And that's in terms of the number of ounces, it's got to do with how we operate the business. The size of business, what the priorities are, how aggressively we pursue them. So a lot of the operating culture starts with the CEO and the executive team. And to be quite honest, I think that we've got some work to do to make sure that we develop a more performance-oriented culture within the group. So that's the first issue. And there are so many elements. I personally think that when I spoke about some weaknesses that help. People systems require significant development. It's got to do with the way we go about setting targets. I have a lot of empathy for the Rustenburg team. They've had a decade of underperformance. Confidence levels are generally low. Conversations between us and them have generally been quite negative. We've been blaming them. I think between Gerard and myself, we have reinvented certainly our personal accountability as far as Rustenburg is concerned. We have assisted the operation by giving them this year, I think, more realistic performance targets. And as we've already gone into the first quarter of our new financial year, I think it's the first time in the last 10 years that they've actually made Elms Call in a particular month, which is absolutely fantastic. So that allows us to have very different conversations with the team. It also rebalances the conversation. So instead of looking at all the negatives contributing to underperformance, we are now moving into a position where we can congratulate people, make them very strong, create leaders in Rustenburg, and focus on how to create a much stronger engine in Rustenburg. And I think that will combine with the optimization project. So I'm quite confident that we are going to have a new look feel in Rustenburg. And I'm quite encouraged by the strength of our general managers, the strength of them. And I think with our direction and perhaps the introduction of one or two new faces in Rustenburg, I'm confident that we are going to improve performance. The question is, how long does it take and how much do you improve? I think it's going to be a big challenge in 2019, but I'm quite 2018. But my personal view is going to take us between 12 and 18 months to get the operation back into a position that I think shareholders deserve.
Just to push a little bit on that, part of the question was, have you made any management changes? If we look at the performance at Rustenburg over a 10-year period, we haven't really seen what previously was guided, etc. Have there been any changes on that can give investors the confidence that there will be some fresh blood there that can effectively change things around?
The answer is yes, and hopefully in due course we will make specific announcements to that effect.
Yes, thank you. And then where does M&A fit into this picture for you? Is it a consideration at all in terms of considering the long-term strategy for the lease, or is this kind of pile on its own going forward?
So the way I think about it is there's urgent current priorities, and that is associated with Impala and with Rustenburg, and that is in the majority of my personal attention. But we cannot ever forget about potential opportunities, particularly in our area cross-boundary opportunities, so we are looking at them. And as I say, our long-term concern is that I think we need to rebalance the portfolio. So we have not switched off the radar screen. There is very exciting work currently being undertaken. And again, it is my aspiration that Brenda and her team can provide us with very exciting news over the next couple of months. There are a few things that we are looking at. And so it's definitely part of our ongoing strategy to evaluate opportunities that add value to the company. And we will continue to do so.
Thank you. And then just lastly, if I may, to Gerard, you mentioned that you consider parking Mimosa, if they enforce the 15% levy. What kind of retaliation do you think that will have on Zimplat?
On Zimplat?
Yeah, do you think that will, that they will be
I don't,
not an environment where you can necessarily play?
I am not at all trying to make war against the government. That will never work. But I also think there are certain realities that we as businessmen must face. So you either have a business that makes money for you, and if it stops making money for you and only makes money to pay taxes, that's not a sustainable business. So therefore, we are in exactly that discussion with government, and we're not doing this to threaten government to anybody. It's the reality, and I think it's our duty to share that reality with government so that it allows them time to reconsider the institution of the levy before it happens.
Thank you.
Got a question at the back there.
Hi, it's Jerome Gooney from Standard Bank. My first question is an elaboration on Jan's question. If you look at the cost, for example, some of the numbers you've guided previously to develop 17 shaft, how do you contrast that or compare that to acquiring one of your neighboring operations, given the execution risk and the time it takes to bring that production online? My second question is, Cerevis is obviously doing very well for you at the moment, but I understand that as you get to the southern part of the mine, the geology gets unfavorable, and it's going to require more capex. When should we start factoring in the decline in grade and the additional capex for modeling purposes?
My recommendation is a multi-pronged attack on the alternative. First, in terms of, and I will say the first question and how you can respond to Peter is, that's a principle decision you can fill in the numbers, is I think there's a significant case for buying rather than building these days, particularly given the nature of the asset. Deep conventional shafts attract a lot of risk, and we as an industry continue to disappoint in terms of delivery and budget control. So I think there is a significant incentive to look at acquisition as opposed to building new. The opposite, do you think?
I'm complete alignment with my CEO, unfortunately. I think that's right. I mean, 17 charters to be clear, it's absolutely parked. And the issue on buy is a simple one. You know, we are absolutely fixated on sort of being value accretive. So it's not, so it all depends on what it is. Is there value to be added to shareholders? What is the risk of adding that value? So it's just a question of doing some. Not against it in principle at all, but it's got to be value accretive.
As far as the Rivers answer is concerned, the management of the Rivers has always been aware of the fact that when you go to the southern side of the current footprint, that the UG2 reef sits up, which means you are mine wider. It contains some internal waste, so therefore the volume that you have to mine to get the ounces up increases. So they've never had a problem in mining volume. The problem is milling and treating that volume when it comes from underground. And therefore the bottleneck at the moment is the plant as the head grade drops and you can't mill more. So there are two solutions for that. The first one is the acquisition of the ground next door, which there was a contribution from Impala a year or two ago, and now Arms added a bit, so the footprint has now increased. So you can start mining other areas than the southern side. So over time, it will fix itself. But in the short term, I think the mine is looking at measures to increase that ability to treat more ounces through the plant. One of it is a scalping plant, try and scalp some of the lower grade material off so that it can get the volume better grade back to the mill. The other one is to just debottleneck the mill itself. So it is something we expect that in a medium term, great challenges for Two Rivers is going to be something that we have to deal with. And our forecast aligns it with that lower grade that they'll be mining in the next year or so.
We've got a couple of questions in the middle here. Yeah, maybe I'll get Patrick. And then you can take more. Let's take the microphone is on its way.
Hi, Patrick Mann from Deutsche Bank. I just wanted to ask on the strategy to start to extract some more cash from Intact and getting dividends out, how does that tie into government's requirement for a certain amount of foreign currency to stay within the country? And do you think it's realistically possible to receive dividends from Zimplat? And then secondly, Nico, maybe just to, you said you've been to most of the operations and met most of the teams, and you've been moving around, I suppose, a fair amount the last decade or so in SA mining. Is there anything, any easy wins or anything that sprung to mind that are relatively quick fixes that you can see at Impala? Thanks.
Right, so on the dividend question, we see that issue at all. It's something that Mimosa has done really in the past, Zimplat has already started to do. Absolutely no issue at all. The money comes out of the country, the government doesn't object. What makes it a little bit easier as well, potentially, we have implemented the employee share ownership trust, which owns 10% of the PET. So there's quite, there's quite a search for dividends anyway to come out of PET, so they can hardly get some benefit into the employee plan. So we don't see it as a challenge at all.
As far as the rapid turnaround or rapid improvement, I'm not convinced that there is a silver bullet, to be quite honest. I think that there are things that we should focus on initially, which has got to do with leadership, culture, performance expectation, accountability, performance management. But there, I think it's a combination of many, many initiatives that they have to change over time. So I wish I could express a high optimism about the rapid turnaround, but I think it's going to be a more gradual improvement. But I do think that there is room for significant improvement, but perhaps it will take a bit longer than what you would be hoping for.
Christopher?
Morning, guys. It's Chris Nicholson from R&B Morgan Stanley. My question was around, we've talked about potentially looking at the individual shafts at Rustenburgly slightly later on, so kind of three questions, but they're all interrelated. The first one is, to what degree each shaft infrastructure is either modular or integrated amongst the lease setters in terms of rock handling, concentrator, all those setters facilities. Secondly, you've never really given us a cost structure per shaft. Is there a sufficiently wide variation in profitability between the existing shafts that you could see a step change from potentially shutting off certain production and leaving the rest in? And then finally, just downstream at IRS, my understanding is most of those costs are fixed. So as we see volume potentially with downside risk, to what extent could you take any costs out of IRS?
So I'm not sure who's going to answer what. I'll start and start. You can fill in. One of my concerns is very little differentiation between the unit operating cost between various shafts. It is very flat. You've got one or two shafts at the end that stand up, one in 12 shaft. But you have to start somewhere. I mean, at least what we would, I mean, so as Philip pointed out earlier, classify a shaft under old, mature, and ramp up. The shafts that have a limited life, they either not make money, you know, so they've got a life of 2 years, we must have a very high level of confidence in their ability to generate cash. Otherwise, there's no point, because we support long-term fundamentals in the market, but by the time that there may be potential increases in basket price, well, then we have depleted all the reserves at a loss, so that does not make sense. As far as the integrated nature of infrastructure is concerned, maybe Sarah wish to comment on that.
It's always part of the difficult questions to me. As you've known, as we've known the lease area, that was the thing that we've always seen, having at least 13 shafts sharing all of the infrastructure. So all of those shafts are interlinked as far as ore handling is concerned, as they're all linked to the train system. They interlink as far as compressed air is concerned, electricity is concerned, and so forth. Therefore, unscrambling the egg is probably the reason why nobody's stopped any of the shocks. It still gives a benefit, so we mustn't forget that. It just means that if you switch one of them off, you don't get that part cut off from the mine. It is part of the review process for us to make sure that we keep the benefit and get rid of the load. Now, any mine, whether it's Two Rivers or the mines are in the days, are self-sufficient in terms of from drilling a hole until having a concentrator up there. But if they would have to share a concentrator with somebody else, would it make them less efficient? No. So therefore, that's not where the problem lies. The problem lies in being able to pay for what you get. And that is what we're really working on at this point in time, is not trying to see those shafts as part of a mass, but to see them as demanding something from the center and having to pay for that back. If there's no demand for that in the center, the question is, can I switch it off? And it's not as simple, otherwise people would have done before. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. And we are looking at that at the moment.
On the clock. So just to keep it clear, when you say IRS, are you talking about the refining cost for Impala or the rest of the IRS business? It doesn't matter. Let me help you. So the it's a little counterintuitive perhaps, but because we always talk about the high fixed cost, and that is very true, but it's for the mine. So there's surprisingly the variable cost for the above surface assets are actually surprisingly high. So Garland has actually switched completely. The labor, for example, is only about 10%, if you do that at a fixed cost. The vast majority of the costs are consumables, utilities, and they vary with the level of throughput. So I'm not saying it isn't a fixed component, but it's less concerning than you potentially think it is if volumes go down. That helps you?
Yeah, sure. Great. Thanks.
I'm going to take one more question from the room, and then we can take some questions over the conference call. So maybe if people on the conference call have got questions, please log in your questions, and we'll try and take a couple from the conference call as well.
Hello, I'm Kofi from Momentum. I just want to check, with regards to Zimplus, I understand that you've relinquished some ground to the government. Just want to check whether it was voluntary or there was something that made you to relinquish that ground, and what impact that will have to your quantified mineral resources.
We do have Alex Mandela, who is the CEO of this one in the room, but he hasn't got a mic on it. So
we can pass him a mic if you want to.
That's a good idea.
There's no free lunches in South Africa. Just hang up your machine and you can answer the question.
You want to find out the reason why we released the ground? It was the initial consent. It was consideration from ourselves after the request had come from government. So we looked at ourselves in terms of our requirement going forward, and particularly taking into account the fact that the current lease would expire in 2019. And that most of the ground that the government is requesting for is not ground that they are currently utilizing or that is in our current plans in terms of mining development. So there was a mutual consideration from the government and from ourselves as well.
Let me clear, it does not affect the company mine life at this stage. So there's no material bearing on the company, and the other alternative if we want to renew, we would have to submit mining plans for exploitation of the SMC tree. There's no intention of investing at this point in time.
But that's what he was explaining there. It does not affect our current mining plans. We do have enough ground to cover for the next 30 years. And in addition, also the process is actually ongoing. It hasn't been completed as yet. We are in discussions with government in terms of the administrative processes to ensure for us to release the ground. So that work has not been completed as yet.
Okay, maybe we can turn to the conference call and try and take a couple of questions from the conference call. I'm not sure who's up first.
Thank you. The next question comes from James Bell of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Sorry, James.
Just two questions. Firstly, on the desire to cut loss-making production or potentially looking at Marula not being cash neutral, how long are you willing to run that for? Are we thinking 6 months, 1 year? You know, when is your target on taking those ounces potentially out of the market if you can't easily turn them around? And second question is just really around the shortfall at Shaft 60 and 20. I saw some figures in the report that you're slightly over budget there. I just wondered how confident you were that this CapEx number won't slip any further. Thanks.
Thanks.
No, I want to answer. I don't mind if you come in. That in terms, and maybe it's useful to just talk about that for a second. When we say we don't support loss-making production, that obviously cannot imply that if we don't make money on this particular day in which we are, that we will cut all production. There are timelines associated with it, and there's confidence associated
with the chains on which they are. Gorilla in particular will be reviewed every quarter, and that's why an area where we're going to apply a sector policy. We do expect them to be cash positive, or cash neutral at least within the first quarter. In Rustenburg, the definition of not supporting loss-making production will probably be applied depending on the class of asset that you're looking at. 16 and 20 being in a ramp-up, we don't expect them to make a profit on day one. That will be tied to the production profile. At mature assets, my guess is you will have a more long data. When I say long data, I'm not talking 5 years, but it probably will be you'll probably be more patient and not expect profits in this particular quarter. We will look at when we can expect it and what the likelihood of doing that. With the older shafts with a short life, we obviously will have a far more aggressive approach. So it depends on what operations we are looking at. And in terms of existing shafts,
I think when you look at that slide that we have in the on the internet, the completeness percentage for the project itself is getting into the 90%. So the risk of overrunning gets less and less as you complete the project. We've now extended to the scope. That's why there was additional money. It's not because we did not budget for enough. The real risk moves from project completeness and the amount of money you need to ramping up and the amount of money you make. And I think that is what is the focus that we are placing on. We are very certain about the numbers for the CapEx. We need to make sure that we achieve the ramp up now. That's much more important in terms of what that job requires. The sooner it can pay for itself, the less I'll worry about how much we've got left to spend. And as you've seen, we are on that, only halfway up that curve now. So that is where we will be focusing on.
A comment on that. I mean, personally.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Okay, anyway, for the audience. I mean, I think we'd be lying to each other if we said that there's no risk, no schedule risk in these ample projects. We are not in South Africa, but we are notoriously poor at executing the schedule. So when I look at 16 and 20 shafts, I think that there is risk associated with the ramp-up profile that we have just published. You know, it is a mine, it's a deep level mine, it will take some time to do it. But I was happy with the way in which the planning was done. So if I look in detail at the way the ramp-up was profiled, the productivity rates, the development rates of new teams, and the productivity rates that they were applied to them in the plan, I think it's probably as pragmatic and realistic as I've ever applied in a particular project, and that gave me some sense of comfort that these projects have a realistic chance of being close to the profile that we have provided in this update.
Can we take another question, please?
The next question comes from Richard Hatch of RBC.
Thank you very much. Just two questions from me. I wonder firstly if you can just quantify how much of the Rustenburg lease is losing money at current prices, and I appreciate there are various nuances around it, but are you able to give a rough guide as to how much production is losing cash and spot? And then secondly, can you quantify the amount of excess downstream capacity you've got versus what you're producing at the moment, and would you consider doing similar to what Lonmin is doing and taking a review to perhaps realise some value out of excess downstream capacity? Thanks.
Just because of the answer, I don't particularly want to answer the first question, but if I look, so, and Brenda can comment as well, or Greg, that there's actually a very small percentage of Luxembourg shafts that are currently making a net profit that's after capital. In fact, I think the EMF shafts, which is a very small percentage of the current production. I think it's fair to say that 90% of current production in Luxembourg requires performance improvement in order to be profitable.
downstream capacity and potential dominant size pools?
Thanks, Nicholas. I think you look at the gross profiles as advised at 1.6 million ounces. We've made no secret that we rate our refinery at around 2.3 million ounces of platinum, so there is considerable headroom on current operations. But it's the duty of RRS to constantly scan the horizon and look at opportunities to fill that. So we constantly assess what is available and look at, as I say, opportunities to fill that capacity.
Sorry, Paul, it's also a point to make that at the PMR, your beer bar is full. So,
yes.
You know, if you put in mass in, there's no capacity in the BMR to sell off excess processing capacity and then use the headroom in the PMR, just to be clear.
That's quite right. Our nickel and copper, as we stand right now, are maxed out at around 19,000 tons of nickel.
Great. Thanks a lot for that.
Can we have another question, please?
The next question comes from Andrew Jano of Investec.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Just a question around the lease area. I see the Merensky mold actually went down over the year, which isn't really what I'd expect. You know, with the new shafts coming on, I'd be expecting Merensky to move up. Is that due to the fire at 14?
Correct. The 14 decline was the Merensky decline shaft. In the past year, the ounce split between Merensky and UG2 was 46% versus 54%. The ton split is less, that's 41 to 59, the reason being that it's a higher grade at Merensky. But it would have been closer to 50-50 if we had the 14 decline.
Okay, super. Thanks.
Have another question?
Yeah, no further questions on the line.
All right, it brings us to the end because we're at the hour mark, so I'm very pleased that you could take all the questions on the line. Let me then just close by thanking everybody for being with us today, for your participation. We are going to be serving some light refreshments outside, so it's always useful to also have a bit of an informal chat, so please join the team. There are other members here as well, so thank you very much. Maybe I can wrap it up here and then we can have a bite outside. Thank you so much.